bless you. May the Lord keep you. May the Lord's face shine on you.
It's time now for Faith in Action, the program that looks at how ordinary people incorporate their faith into their everyday lives. The program is underwritten by St. Vincent Health, providing the spirit of caring through 20 health ministries that serve 46 central Indiana counties, and by Marian University, offering Catholic and academic excellence in the Franciscan and liberal arts traditions.
May the Lord's peace be with you.
Welcome to another edition of Faith in Action here on Catholic Radio. I'm Jim Ganley. Our co-host today is MJ Crowder.
Jim, what a wonderful radiothon we had.
We did. We had great participation from listeners and donors, and great participation from volunteers, too. Could not do it without them.
Oh, that was great. It was a great, you know, I always say that when we have a radiothon, it was the best ever. This really was the best ever. And not only because of the generosity of our listeners and supporters, but our guests were wonderful this time. We never laughed so hard. It was a great radiothon. Should we just jump right in?
Absolutely.
Let's just jump right in. Our guest today, Faith in Action, Dr. Louis Profeta. Welcome.
Oh, thank you very much, MJ. Glad to be here.
You know, the way you came to us, to me, got on my radar was kind of interesting. You're an ER doc at St. Vincent's, and I always think ER docs, you see people on the worst day of their lives, right?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
But sometimes on the best day of their lives.
Oh.
Yeah, sure.
Oh.
We give some of the best news that they could ever possibly imagine.
That's true.
Too.
I like that. Making lemonade, the flip side. I was actually, and listeners will know I'm on Facebook. Like us on Facebook, by the way, if you're listening. Catholic Radio, like us. I was going through a friend of mine a few weeks ago, and doctor, something that you had written made it on, she shared it maybe, or copied, pasted, I don't know, onto hers. And it was, I thought it was like a blog. I thought you were a blogger at that point when I saw it. And I read through this and I thought, oh my goodness. So that's what got you in the door today. Before we get started in that, tell us a little bit about your family. What side of town you live on? Wife, kids, how long have been married? What's the deal?
Well, I mean, I grew up here in Indianapolis, not too far actually away from your radio station. Went to North Central High School, went to high school right in the area.
Oh, yeah.
Went to college at Indiana, medical school there. And I'm married. Wife Cheryl, mm-hmm. who I also have known since childhood. And we have three sons, two in New York and in college right now, and one still here in Indianapolis. Three boys, all very active in sports when they're younger.
All very active in sports. Okay. And therein lies the genesis of the blog, maybe.
Absolutely.
I don't know, the posting.
Absolutely.
Okay, so the reason that it caught my attention was, and I'll just kind of give the gist of it, and you can tell us a little bit more, but the reason I liked it, it spoke to me. It was, I think kind of the subject read something like, your kid's not going to make it to the big leagues and neither is mine. Something like that, right?
Yes, your kid and my kid are not playing in the pros.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, and I thought, okay, you got my attention. We had, and listeners, I'm sure, I'm not unlike many of you out there, we had a son who was really good in soccer and got recruited by Brown University, ended up going to Providence, but that senior year when we were getting calls and it was like, oh, this is so exciting. What an adrenaline rush. And a friend of mine in the process told us, this is just a cruel tease, MJ. It's just a cruel tease. Nothing's going to come of it. And I thought, well, how can you say that? How can you say that it's happening? But of course, nothing. He's not a professional soccer player, BT Dubs. He works for my husband for the family business, and that's okay. And he's 31. He's happy and has a grandchild. But I want to know, where did that article come from? And I want to talk about that.
Oh, well, it had been sort of percolating around in my brain for a while. Everything from a combination of the factors of things I see in the emergency department related to injuries in children with in travel sports and athletics, and also my own experience with my own kids and going to all these travel tournament events. From we did baseball and lacrosse and football, and I have a son that plays collegiate golf, and also I excuse me, I do consulting work for USA Gymnastics. And I was actually their team doctor in 1999, the World Championships in China. And being around all these athletes over the years and seeing what they went through, what I went through as a youth, how sports has changed. And I finally just not really had it, but I said, hey, it's time to address this issue in a little,
lift
the veil in a little more of a in-your-face, sarcastic, hyperbole way that I don't think had been done before. And the article sort of went crazy.
It did. Well, you kind of say something in the article. It caught my attention because we have five kids, and to me, the evening meal was kind of sacrosanct. I mean, I wanted everybody home for dinner. I mean, I don't care what we were doing, but I wanted us all around the family dinner table. To me, that was kind of like golden time for us. And you mentioned something in the article that gone is the chicken dinner, you know, and the veggies and the mashed potatoes to download the evening. That's gone. And we've sacrificed it for what?
I make a comment about the fact, or something to the fact that the practice field has become the new generation of our, or the new dinner table of our generation, or this generation. And somehow we have moved away from family time and unity time at a table or church or, you know, at weekend events at grandma, grandpa's house or family gatherings or picnics or what have you, to running from one travel tournament sporting event to another, from point A to point B. And not only that, when you have more than one child, you're splitting up the family. You're going to different locations.
But Dr. Profeta, this happened in one generation, because I can tell you, by the way, listeners, I haven't told you, but he also wrote a book that it will tickle you and confound you and irritate you and tickle you again. So great. It's called The Patient in Room 9 Says He's God. We'll talk about that more the second half. But I can tell you from my experience, and I know from reading your book, and anybody who's around my age, 50 or something in the middle there, my parents didn't run me anywhere. When I was a kid, whatever I could get to by walking or staying after school or riding my bike, I did. But it was mostly school. I mean, it was school and anything I could do intramurally for fun. That was a generation ago, and you couldn't have been much different than that, although in your book you do gymnastics a little bit, but your parents weren't running at you everywhere.
No, and I absolutely believe this is a generational thing. And this has really come to, I think, fruition over the last 20 years or so. Child sports has become just an absolute animal. And, you know, you'll look at the comments on the thread of that article, and I always joke that there's 20,000 soccer moms that want me dead right now. But you look at the threads and how angry people get when you start to sort of question the motives behind them and the travel team sort of mentality. And I don't... You know, there'll be a lot of commentary about the fact, or they'll say, you know, sports builds character, or I want my kid to be busy, or I want him involved, and what's wrong with them, you know, developing dreams and goals and expectations. And there's nothing. But you know what? We had dreams, goals, expectations way before there were travel sporting events.
Sure.
And you know what? It didn't cost our family tens of thousands of times. It did not break down the nucleus structure of the family to do athletics. It didn't become the central hub of everything that went on in the family, especially when one child was more of a successful athlete than another.
Sure.
But when did the entire family structure revolve around touring to or driving to Columbus for a travel soccer event, or you know trekking on down to Evansville for a baseball event? When did that become the pivot point for the entire family dynamic?
It's crazy.
It's absolutely crazy.
As you're talking, I'm thinking, okay, so you're an ER doc. You're St. Vincent's ER doc. So I am sure, and you even mentioned a little bit in that article about a mom who will come to you and you've got a broken arm or a broken leg or a twisted something or other, and she's interested in, can he play the game on Sunday? Okay.
Well, yeah, and I can understand that, especially with a child that is so involved, or his entire life is sort of surrounding this, you know, this event, the sporting event, and I can understand why that becomes the first question out of their mouth. But then you have to wonder, why is this such a why is this so all encompassing for the family? I'll have parents that'll say, you know, in that thread of that article, what am I supposed to do? Destroy my child's dreams? Well, your kid's 12 years old. What child, what 12-year-old child doesn't, you know, how can a 12-year-old have a lifelong dream? I mean, there's not a boy in America that doesn't want to be a professional athlete when he's 10 or 11. Sure. I mean, that's what they all want to do. Or, sure. You know, that's not a lifelong dream. A child has an entire life to learn what dreams sure. they have, but to be so focused on this one thing. And it becomes disturbing. And it, not only that, it becomes disturbing because of all the sort of alterations they want to make in the child's well-being, or willing to sacrifice in terms of the child's well-being for the necessity to get back out on that playing field and play. And it's become an animal. It's become a runaway train that we have to reel in.
Well, as you're talking, I'm thinking there's a lot of pride here. There's a lot of ego here. And if we created this monster in a generation, I'm not so, I think, since we created it in one generation, we can return it in one generation. Is that being rose-colored glasses?
I think it is. And I think it's possible. It can be. Okay. I think that we are seeing sort of the pendulum swinging back, and I think you're seeing it in terms of spirituality too, nationwide. That we're starting to see the swing back. From that maybe the '60s ideology to now getting back to God and family and spirituality. I think this new group of people are starting to come up, going, I've had it.
Amen.
You know.
Amen.
And hopefully that is the case. And, you know, I'll hear people that'll say, well, you know, sports builds character. Well, listen, there's tons of things that build character. Sports is just one of 1,000 venues that allows your child an opportunity to express their character. And I always say, you know, people will point at all the great things and all the great leaders have come out of sports. And, well, I can also point at a lot of great criminals that have come out of sports, too. You look at Jackie Robinson, you look at baseball in the time of Jackie Robinson, and you say that, baseball made Jackie Robinson the person he is. Maybe to some extent, but he also had a very strong religious family. He was sure. also in the military, and he elevated baseball. Okay, he lifted baseball. Baseball was not what it was until Jackie point. Robinson walked in. It was the character of Jackie Robinson that elevated baseball, not the opposite way around.
That's a good point.
Okay, and you build character through 1,000 things. And guess what? Time with your grandparents, time with your parents, sitting around the dinner table, your mentors, your teachers, your friends, your neighbors. That's what builds the character of a child.
If you're just now tuning in, listeners, our guest today, Dr. Louis Profeta, he's an ER doc at St. Vincent's. We need to take a break and we'll be right back.
An interview with Brother Trenton Rout and how Catholic radio influenced his vocation.
I was not struck by lightning and knocked off my horse. I had a lot of time driving in the car listening to the radio, and I just got to a point where I would prefer to listen to something that would be intellectually stimulating. At the same time, I was learning about the faith, having that accessible, particularly the apologetics.
Catholic radio, building faith, building vocations.
Welcome back to Faith in Action. Our guest today, Dr. Louis Profeta. He's an ER doc at St. Vincent's. He's an author. The patient in room 9 says he's God. When I heard that, I had to get the book. We talked a little bit of the first half, in fact, pretty much the whole first half, about an article that you wrote. I don't know where it came from. I just saw it on someone's Facebook page, but it definitely grabbed my attention. What was the genesis of that article, by the way? Where did you write it?
Well, I wrote that article probably a year, almost maybe 2 years ago. Okay. And it was right around the time my my youngest son, who was an incredible athlete, great kid though, mm-hmm. okay, even better kid than athlete, suffered his second ACL injury in just 9 months playing football. And he came up to me and said, Dad, I'm done. I don't want to do it anymore. Oh. And it was the fact that he came up to me sort of sad, sure. not because he wasn't playing, but because he thought I would be upset.
Disappointed.
Yeah, and I realized, oh my gosh, you know, Zach, I'm fine with that. You know, I feel horrible that you're hurt, but it's your life. You do what you want to do. Yeah. I'm fine with that. And but just the fact that he was upset that he thought I would be upset bothered me. And I sort of took pen to paper, and all this stuff had been going around my mind. I wrote this article, and I had submitted it to Nouveau magazine, but you know, they never heard back from them, and they never did anything. And I bumped into somebody one day, and she said, "You worked at Nouveau." And I said, "Oh, I gave you this article." And she said, "Oh, resend it to me." So they put it on their online magazine, and there's not a, as far as I knew, there wasn't a whole lot of readership for the online version, but obviously I was wrong. But I had I had looked at the online articles and saw that the average article maybe had about 4 comments and was shared, you know, 5-10 times on Facebook. So I wrote the article, threw it out there, didn't think it was going to do anything. And within a week, it had gone viral and had been shared, I think, like 130,000 times and read close to 500,000 times. Oh, yeah. And it had been reprinted on the online version of everything from, I think, the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette to Cincinnati Inquirer, on and on, and gotten picked up by
you
one of the news.
Yeah, you hit a nerve.
And I've gotten emails from literally all over the world, from Australia, England, you know, Canada, everywhere, thanking me for writing the article, even though all the comments and the threads are horrible. How could you do this? How could you sacrifice the golden calf of sports?
But I think there's a hunger. I mean, you mentioned it in the first half a little bit about the pendulum swinging back, and I'll tell you, something kind of struck me. Of course, I'm born and bred Catholic, cradle Catholic, big Catholic family, number 12 of 14 kids. I mean, Catholic is my middle name. But when we had our first son, he's 31 years old, sometime in the middle of his soccer career, when he was like 14, 15, so he was into 2 or 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years at that point, they started having soccer games on Sunday morning. Let me tell you something. It was like I was not alive when they started having stores open on Sunday, because that was in my lifetime. But my parents would say, gosh, they never used to have stores open on Sunday. But to have soccer games, it was kind of like Dr. Perfeta. In the old days, after noon on Sunday, anything was okay. But before noon, it was kind of like you didn't touch that time, man. And we were having soccer games. We were being asked to show up at 9 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday morning for a soccer game. And I remember approaching a coach and saying, whoa, wait a minute. I mean, how are we going to, you know, and Saturday evening, they were playing the tournament Saturday evening, the night before, another option for us. For Catholics to go to Mass, you know, Saturday evening or Sunday morning, and they're game.
Well, that, you know, it's interesting you bring that up. I had gotten numerous emails, surprisingly, from clergy, and I had no thought about this, and saying that they can no longer get kids into church on Sundays because of travel sports, that they have to accommodate these travel schedules by having weekday and late evening sort of Sunday school religious school classes. You'd know more about this than me, but I thought about how sad that is, and I, you know, realized that, boy, they're exactly right. I mean, we went to so many tournaments on Sundays and played on those days, and you know, you got to be there Friday afternoon, and you don't come back till Monday morning or late Sunday night, and that's what you do.
Yeah, that's our weekend.
You know, and it was incredibly sad. And another thing that struck me was how many grandparents were sending me emails.
Oh, sure.
And you could see that, you could read the despair in their emails about I had one grandparent that said, "I hope I don't get sick and die on a Saturday, because they won't be there." And you know, and I had another grandparent that said her husband had died, and the grandchildren did not come to the funeral because they had an important travel soccer tournament to go to, and the kids were 14. And you know, they'll say, "Listen, you know." They'll act like they really like going to these events, sitting out at these baseball fields, going to these soccer tournaments, going to these lacrosse events. But, you know, for elderly people or older people, that grandparents, great-grandparents, they cannot walk those distances, carrying those chairs, sitting in that sun, watching that event. They may act like they love it. But you know what? For the most part, they don't. And if they're telling you they love it, they're lying. They're saying it because they don't want to hurt your feelings. And also, they know that they are not going to see their grandparents grandchildren unless they're parked out on that field. How sad is that?
That's sad.
It's horrible.
Listen, Dr. Profeta, I'm glad. I am thankful that you put it out there in black and white because it needed to be said. I'm glad you said it. I do want to jump over to your book, The Patient in Room 9 Says He's God. That was mentioned. The only reason I found out about this is the signature at the bottom says, you know, you can reach me at, you know, like Dr. Profeta at ATT dot whatever. And then they mentioned the book, and I thought, oh my goodness, that the title, catchy, loved it. Let me just tell you one thing about the book. It is, every chapter is a different story. I love stories. I love stories. But for me, this book was about, and I have several questions, but this book was about finding God unexpectedly, because I had the feeling that you were writing this surprised. At some point in your life, you became surprised that you were finding God everywhere and in sometimes surprising places, or the links of your life connected, and it was kind of a wink from God. That's what I kind of got from this, but I loved the stories, and so I have a question for you.
Sure. Absolutely.
Do you have an incredible memory? Did you start a journal? I loved these. I loved every one of them, and I hope there's going to be a part two because.
There is. Yeah, I just got to finish it.
Do you journal? I mean, how do you remember these things?
I can't explain how I can remember it, but I can remember things like this in ridiculous detail. I've always had that, you know, everything from the smell to the sight to what people are wearing, and I have trouble remembering phone numbers or my own anniversary, so my wife had to chisel it into my ring, but issues like that have had an emotional impact on me.
And
those events are locked in.
I want you to talk about some incident in here. You talk about your gymnastics as a kid, but I was relating this to my kids, and I want my kids to read it after I finish it. But you talk about a story in there that almost brought me to tears, and that was about this little old woman, aged, geriatric woman who'd kind of been shuffled around. You were the kind of late, kind of tired, maybe close to the end of your shift, and she was behind a curtain needing to be taken care of. Maybe her hair was matted. Maybe she was soiled. But she was definitely geriatric. Like, mm-hmm. I'm talking way, way old.
Oh, absolutely.
And you were just, you know, she was kind of being pushed around, and you were going to check her over for something. And you walked towards her. And as you walked towards her or walked into the room, she was no longer this 88-year-old or 90-year-old woman. And I love the way you described her. I loved the way you talked. Do you remember the story?
Oh, of course I remember it.
Okay, so tell our listeners, because you said something about you looked at her and you saw this 5-year-old little girl, mm-hmm. and then you saw this young woman with her beloved, and you saw this young woman having children. It was so beautiful.
Well, I think it was shortly after I had my first child, and I was working here in the department, and, you know, you're trying to find your way through the world spiritually, I guess, and we had a busy shift. We were getting beaten up from 10 different directions. And we had a lady from a nursing home, elderly, demented, Alzheimer's patient. You know, again, like you said, matted, soiled undergarments, that kind of stuff. Not, you know, not the glamour that they show on the show ER. Just, you know, sort of a, not neglected, but forgotten.
Forgotten.
Okay. And as I was walking out of the room, I'll never forget, I walked out of the room and I turned around. I stopped at the door. And for whatever reason, I turned around and I looked at her. And I saw my child. And I said to myself, that lady right there is somebody's child. Not an elderly lady. That's a little girl. That was a little girl at one time. And she was running around the field. And all of a sudden, I had this incredibly intense mental image of what her childhood was like. It was like I could visualize it. Now, I have no idea if that was it. But, you know, I could see her as a little girl. And once I had that sort of paradigm shift, especially when it came to that population of patients, you look at them different. You realize, and you think, I mean, we know how old we are right now. One day we're going to die. Do you think when our children are 80 and 90 years old, we'll love them any less than we do when they're 3 or 5 years old?
Oh, sure. No.
And, you know, even now it sort of gets me sort of emotional when I look at my own children and I think of them when they're that age, you know. I want to be their parent then.
Yeah. I love this book. Listeners, if you're just now tuning in, our guest today, Dr. Louis Profeta, he's a St. Vincent's ER doc, and God bless you for that, because you do see a lot. And thank goodness that you capsulized a lot of these stories and a lot of your experiences in the ER into this book. The Patient in Room 9 Says He's God. Where can we get this, by the way?
Mostly online, Amazon. Some of the bookstores carry it, but
okay.
It's on. There's you can log it up online.
So go up your last name, I guess,
Profeta. Yeah.
Okay. Profeta, just like
Or type it in the title. It'll pop up.
Yeah. We've got a minute and a half left, Doc. I mean, loved the way you came across our radar. God's everywhere. I mean, obviously, but I loved how this wove itself into our lives. So I'm ceding the last minute and a half to you. What do you want to put out there?
Well, boy, we're all linked. Especially in the emergency department, we see some of the worst events imaginable. We give some of the worst news that anybody can ever experience. But we also see some of the most incredible stories of survival and elevation of the human spirit that can be imagined. And the worst day of your life today, or the worst event in your life today, can have an incredible, profound effect years later. You may not be able to identify it, but if you go and sort of reflect on your own lives, you'll be amazed at how many things, if you can sort of backtrack from the best days of your lives, you'll realize the amount of little mini steps and mini miracles that had to happen over the course of your life for that you to reach point B from point A. And instead of looking forward all the time, sometimes we need to look back and realize where our blessings came from. And it makes life a lot more enjoyable. And we can sort of, celebrate the incredible experience of life.
Well said. Well said. Thank you so much for being our guest today, St. Louis. that was a Freudian slip. Dr. Louis Profeta, St. Vincent ER doc, and a wonderful guest. May the Lord's peace be with you.
Thank you. You too.
May the Lord's peace be with you.
You've been listening to Faith in Action, underwritten by St. Vincent Health, providing the spirit of caring through 20 health ministries that serve 46 central Indiana counties, and by Marian University, offering Catholic and academic excellence in the Franciscan and liberal arts traditions. To suggest a guest or a topic for this program, call us at 317-870-8400.
May the Lord's peace be with you. May the Lord's peace be with you.